Bandwidth for MacBreak Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
You're listening to MacBreak Tech.
Yeah.
It's like a particle effect.
Right.
How did you make that?
But that was in Keynote.
We now join a conversation already in progress.
Scrubbing.
Scrubbing is always a good thing. What are you scrubbing?
I'm scrubbing up this little video that I did.
Who's it for?
It's a resume item. Let me just say that.
Yeah?
Yep.
How did you make it?
I made it using a number of different programs. The actual edit's done in Final Cut, of course.
We love Final Cut.
I did. Took some old footage that I'd done whilst at IDEO and put some... just some basic titles on that. And I did that in Motion because I like to scale it.
Mm-hmm.
Then I had another graphic. I had actually a number of other simple little graphics that I did in Keynote. And then took them from Keynote and put them into Final Cut.
You used Keynote to make a video.
I do it all the time.
Now, why do you use Keynote instead of just using the titler inside of Final Cut?
Titler. Or I've never, ever... Is that my phone?
I never
in my life used a titler in Final Cut.
Who's ringing?
That's my phone.
All right. Well, just let it ring. It's okay. Somebody important. It's probably the Google guy calling you back. His ears were warm or something.
Exactly. Something was going on. But yeah, no. Anymore, I've been using Keynote quite a bit to do down and dirty real fast. In fact, these overlays on these videos I could have done in Keynote, but rendering out video and then something on top of it using Keynote isn't necessarily the fastest way.
Right.
You know, Motion's good for that. But if I'm creating a graphic from scratch, it's really great. Because there's this one here, in fact, I didn't show it to you guys, but it's rather complicated in that...
It's a bunch of icons floating around.
And then this thing sort of moves too.
Looks like icon bloom to me.
Yeah.
It's like a particle effect.
Right.
How did you make that?
But that was in Keynote.
Wow.
And then I had these little arms that are sort of acting as ganglion.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, with the new version of Keynote, it's great because the particle effect, the great thing about Keynote is that you just kind of have a beginning and an end.
Okay.
And, you create a build or something to actually move this thing. And it just stays there. So, I mean, what I mean by that is, you know, you say where it is at the beginning, you say where it is at the end, and then it handles everything else in between, like most programs do. But there's something really elegant about the way that Keynote does it is that, you know, I just say I want it to end up here, and I just drag it, and it'll always end up there.
Mm-hmm. Does it have built-in ease in, ease out without you having to go tell it to do it?
Yeah, you have a pull-down detail of choice on that kind of thing.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's on by default, knowing Apple.
It is?
It's going to be slick by default if you want it to be.
Yep.
To jerk going, at the beginning of the end.
So exactly. In other words, it's not going to suck on purpose.
Right, you need to make it do that explicitly. Right. Yeah.
It's like, ooh, the suck more button.
But there's so many things that make it so fast that... And you don't really have a timeline, because I find, you know, a lot of, especially the stuff that I do with an illustration, is that there's the motion part of it, and then it's still.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of that's right. The style.
It goes from boom and then ends.
And then in the Final Cut timeline, of course, I extend that with a still frame.
Right.
While my voiceover or whatever continues. Yeah. And that's, you know, a pretty standard way of doing it. But the great thing with doing a video in Keynote is that I basically tell it, you know, animate this quote slide,
mm-hmm.
and it just does that motion, and then that's all I really need. So I have this tiny little movie that I don't have to really worry about how long is it going to be, et cetera, et cetera. If I actually need to make the actual motion part longer or slower, it's very easy in Keynote. You just change the length of that transition.
And for those who may not be familiar with it, you're getting these out via the custom export option, right?
Yes.
So you can have control over the codec and all the attributes that you would if you're exporting from QuickTime Pro or something like that.
Yes, exactly. So with Keynote, has a very powerful export function altogether with PDFs and individual images. But with movies, it does that as well. And then, yes, you can do a custom export. And then you're basically in then the QuickTime interface to set the... So I set for the one... If I need anything that needs an alpha channel, then you know, I export as an animation, including the transparency from Keynote. And actually, the thing we were trying before we started the show was, or actually, we don't start the show. Before the show was in progress, yeah. All we were pre-progressing the show.
Before the pre-progress, or the pre-conversation before the conversation.
Right, is the thing that I found, and Kenji, who's not here right now, he's stuck in traffic somewhere, would probably say, I know a better way. But what I did was, I told my Keynote slide, you can set the background color for every slide. I told it no background color.
Okay.
And that then I got my, quote, alpha channel from that.
I used Keynote, oh my gosh, this would have been 4 years ago when the thing first came out. I had to do a whole bunch of slides, a bunch of words that were all in the same position. They all were the same font. They were all the same thing.
Right.
So I set up a template in Keynote to basically make that text look like that. Mm-hmm. And then I typed in all the words, because there's nothing worse than being in After Effects and having to deal with that tool to go and correct your spelling, because there is no spelling checker in After Effects.
All right.
It's just, you know, it's one of those things like, come on, guys, it's a computer. I spent $2,000 on this app and it doesn't have a spell checker.
Yeah.
So off to Keynote. So I made the words, you know, basically fill the screen. Mm-hmm. And then because we have one rule about alpha channels, and that is black shows through. So everything that's black is transparent, and everything that's white is the thing that shows up on the screen. Mm-hmm. So I exported it basically black or white text on a black background, mm-hmm. and then did shift channel in After Effects to not make my alpha.
Mm. Oh.
Then I used a still or a solid, and I overlaid it on top of that, and then linked the two so that it didn't hit that the solid inherited the alpha. And so then I had colored letters that I could do whatever I wanted to. So if I wanted to use min-max to expand the alpha to get a glow around it, I could do that, or you know, any of that. And the thing was, is it was so fast to do that. You know, then the client sees it, they want to rewrite every single one of the words.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, right.
Typical client, right?
Right.
Client spelled C-H-A-N-G-E,
mm-hmm,
right? Mm-hmm. They wanted everything, you know, their words. So it took literally 5 minutes after I got the words typed into Keynote to re-export the slide files. And then After Effects picked them up, because I wasn't changing the timing. All I was doing was changing the media.
Yep.
And it had the same name, so it picked it up. Boom. I was rendered out. And they're like, I'm like, well, this is way too fast.
I know.
I better just go play video games for the rest of the day and turn this in tomorrow.
Right. I'd say that was an 8-hour job, man.
Yeah. So I didn't want to let on that it was that easy to change all of this animation.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the thing with the whole iWork suite is this is so flexible, and there's so many, you could do so much cross pollination between them. Like one of the things I discovered in a slide I just did for Stanford last week was to line up text in Keynote. I wanted to have things line up in a certain way, all with an equal kind of margin or whatever. And it was kind of a lot of work to do it manually. And I can always do the distribution by, you know.
Oh, in Illustrator, using the distribution tool?
Right. And you have that in Keynote as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted I had like 8 different boxes of text with 5 lines each. And I wanted all that spacing to be this consistently the same on all of those boxes. So to do that manually would be a little bit tricky. But then I just built a table. Just like a table, a table you'd find in Numbers or a table you'd find in Pages. I just built a table, same, and it's the same engine, so it's the same table.
Right.
So it uses the same interface and has the same rules as the other apps do. So I built a table and just took away all the lines. So, you know, it's invisible.
Right.
And then, much to my delight, you know, in Keynote, you can also tell it to build things by table. So even in builds, they have it recognizes the table characteristics and builds things using, you know, the table formatting. So it's just uber, uber flexible that way. I love it.
Sorry about the train whistle in the background, everybody.
Is it a train?
Yeah, that's the Muni being bugged that the car is in his path.
It sounded like a train in distress.
Yeah. No, it's a train being pissed off.
Yeah.
Well, tables, that was one of the things that they changed in the second version. They added the table build function.
Mm.
That is totally useful.
It's far more than I thought it would be.
Well, the other thing that's fun about that is that you can put pictures in those tables, mm-hmm, right?
Right.
You can put movies in those tables,
mm-hmm,
and you could just go build, 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 and it would play. You know, the event of the movie ending would then cause the next one to show up.
Right.
So, or it could be movie text graphic.
Yep. Right. Right. And the other, and then of course the new feature in the new keynote has this ability to have motion interstitially, as it were, or into the actual, you can move a slide and then you can have it move within that page. So before it was only, mm-hmm, you can either come in and then go out.
Right.
Now they have, you can have motion within the frame. So I can say, move in, and then at the next build, go up a few inches.
Mm-hmm.
Or and go to your corner.
Or go to your corner, or actually you have to do that. You have to tell it. You have to drag it manually to a corner.
But then that move is remembered.
That move is remembered.
And yes. You get an arbitrary number of those build events, don't
you? Can.
You, per slide.
Yeah,
so you can do pretty complex animation if you want.
You can do very complex. And you can do scales and opacities and moves,
mm-hmm,
and rotations. So, and then I just have them build together as a width. So build width is the you know, function when you set up the build. So I can have something rotate and scale down and move to nothing. I'll let one fell swoop.
To put this in perspective, to do the same thing in motion, mm-hmm, would take hours to do.
I mean, it would take a little while, but, well, yeah.
But you're keyframing everything. You're saying, oh, here's my beginning of this, here's my end. I'm dealing with, mm-hmm, a timeline, mm-hmm, instead of basically, this is what the start is and this is what the end is.
Right. I mean, it's sort of easier. It's certainly easier in motion than it is in After Effects, mm-hmm, in terms of speed.
Right. But it's certainly easier to do in Keynote and then even export the stuff to where you're going to go.
Absolutely.
And I guess it has everything to do with the tweakability you need, right? Because, mm-hmm, there are a finite set of,
yes,
of animations, and you don't necessarily get to tweak with a curve for the animation other than, mm-hmm, telling it ease in, ease out, or be straight, that, mm-hmm, sort of thing.
Right.
Motion's behaviors, I think, do make that sort of thing you're, mm-hmm, talking about, John, maybe, mm-hmm, a little easier than it used to be. You can sort of just define an animation event where you get a couple, mm-hmm, parameters to tweak. But,
right.
But you're right. If you're keyframing that stuff from scratch, that's, yeah, that's a lot more difficult.
Well,
yeah,
and then especially when you're dealing with text and you're, mm-hmm, having to deal with this fact that this is the thing that everyone who thinks text, they're like, oh, I can infinitely change this. And especially when you're in this thing of I'm making a DVD,
mm-hmm,
changing a word,
mm-hmm,
from one word to another is hours of work,
mm-hmm,
because you change the word, you got to re-render the movie, you got to re-render the DVD, and then you burn the DVD. 4 hours later, you're out the door.
Mm-hmm.
So you really have to be conscious of that. And that's why doing some of this work,
mm-hmm,
in this case video work, using a presentation tool makes a ton of sense to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially since so many of the accompanying graphics for a lot of types of video are just words over some shape,
yep,
colored words over, yep, some other colored shape. Yep. And
lower thirds, it's, right, all kind of basic. And, yeah, they all kind of do the same thing unless they get really swoopy and then they're corny.
Right.
So, I mean, Keynote is really good for lower thirds. It's super good because, you know, you can create your template and then you just change the text as you normally would.
And even if you had some sort of in-house library or your own little personal library of discrete, hopefully,
mm-hmm,
motion elements, those can be brought into the, mm-hmm, Keynote,
right,
just as well, right? And animated with all your other text. I mean, if it's just a little movie.
Oh, a little movie, uh-huh,
that has its own alpha channel or whatever, it obeys the alpha channels,
yep,
of that sort,
mm-hmm,
of thing. So you could do, you know, mini, even animated lower thirds and something like,
yeah,
Keynote.
Yeah, I've had a little bit of issue that I'm still trying to debug. And I don't know if you had this, John, of putting a movie into Keynote and then exporting that as a movie again.
Mm.
I haven't done that.
I've had it tell me, I've experienced an error,
uh-huh,
so it's not quite dead on perfect yet.
Interesting.
In my experience. Now, I might, yeah, be doing something wrong.
Maybe something about the elements you were using. Or,
yeah, yeah, or something. So it hasn't been completely. It's really great when I build something from scratch.
None of your elements were named break_keynote that move.
I don't, maybe. Maybe there was a variable in there.
Yeah.
That,
maybe this is the problem, is that, you know, how we have cheap note to go?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the idea of you use Preview as Keynote.
All right.
So, mm-hmm, that you basically, you know, make a folder, all the files that are named in order 010203 or 001002,
mm-hmm,
and then you can have up to 1,000,
yeah,
slide titles. Command A, Commando, show slideshow, and then you basically arrow through it. And then you have a presentation tool made out of nothing but a bunch of slides.
Now, would Preview play movies?
No.
It's a static thing.
Yeah, it's a static thing. It won't
put slides down.
Right. The movie's not going to open in that thing. But yeah. That's okay. That's why it's called Cheap Note. It doesn't have every single feature that we want it to have.
Yes. That's too bad. I did the reverse last week at our Stanford seminar, where I had a very complicated keynote, which big slide. Mm-hmm. And I told everyone, this is breaking all the rules, you know, hundreds of words. But the whole point was, this is a reference table we'd go back and forth to. And I wanted to be able to point to it on the screen, but I don't have the pointer tool thing or whatever. So I just exported that individual slide as a PNG out of Keynote, brought it into Preview,
okay,
put that up on the screen, and then went into annotate mode on Preview and used the red arrow, and I just drew on the screen, okay, I was talking about basically online media, the different types and how to differentiate streaming from all these terms that I was disambiguating
to,
right, and then this is a QuickTime, and then this is web delivered, and this is RSS. So I was adding all these categories, and we'd have all these different examples. And I just used the annotation tool, brought up this lovely little red arrow. I went bink, 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 bink.
It was a destructive laser pointer,
exactly. So Preview. That's a whole another show.
That's a whole another show, but that's an example.
Awesome.
Cheap Note to go, and then you have Cheap Laser, mm-hmm. and. The other thing is that I was going to say is that Keynote is actually Cheap Motion.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, because you get it for $79 with two other programs, mm-hmm. and you can do all this motion graphics with it with not even thinking about it.
Right. You know, exactly. So you can do quite a bit with iMovie and Keynote and Pages and just kind of, you can get away with quite a bit of stuff.
Pages is not an animation tool the same way that Keynote is.
Right.
Works the same way, though. That's the beauty of these three tools.
Mm-hmm.
That once you know how to get around in Keynote, it's not a big deal to get around in Pages. And then it's not a big deal to get around in Numbers.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Yeah, because user interface paradigm is, as you would expect, pretty uniform across them.
Right.
Oh, and that new program, Bento, borrowed all the UI elements.
Oh, I haven't played with it yet.
Oh, yeah. Bento.
Bento, the new thing from...
So it's basically the file maker.
Yeah, it's basically...
Right.
File maker that's like cut off at the knees or something like that. No scripting language. More along the lines of... Okay, so you know how when you use a spreadsheet, most people use a spreadsheet as a list maker.
Mm-hmm.
Number one use of Excel is not sum.
Big accounting.
Not min, max, none of that other stuff. No average, no, right. You know, all of the, no, none of those functions. It's used to make a list.
Yep.
Yep. Like this big program, $800 or what? No. No, on the Mac, it's $495 with Word and PowerPoint and that. Mm. And people use Excel to shopping list.
Yeah.
And they don't even use the sort function.
Yeah.
We're hoping that they're not buying the suite to use Excel as a list. We're hoping that they already have Excel and they just happen to
their go-to. Well, no, this is the thing with most of the office workers is that they're like, oh, hey, boxes. Okay, I can make a list here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's there already.
Right.
One of the things about Numbers is that there's a template that is a list.
Yeah, right.
And it's got check boxes right off.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And, these underlying engine that's driving, it's the new sort of consumer app interface that Apple's been working on, in sort of a hybrid is iWeb, because iWeb is basically using that same engine, and it's using this it's using the same engine and the same interface paradigm,
mm-hmm.
as the other iWork apps. It's only that iWeb happens to be an iLife, so it's sort of this little hybrid, I would say, because it's basically using a very similar engine. I've taken elements out of Keynote, put them into iWeb, vice versa, and they translate pretty well. It's almost like they recognize themselves as objects in the same kind of way.
Probably they are.
Yeah, I was going to say, they're representations of I'm a media object, I'm a text mm-hmm. object. I wouldn't be surprised if those are the same throughout this.
I'm going to say that iWeb actually feels like it should be part of iWork.
I totally agree.
You know, like they should have just not made... And it's like they needed one more app to... mm-hmm. make iWeb or iLife even cooler. So they're like, here, let's put this in here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that it's more appropriate that it's an iWork app.
I agree. If they amp it up a little bit more the new version's great. It's got a lot of great new things in it. But if they amp it up a tiny bit more, put it in with iWork, then at least from a user interface point of view, it would start to make sense.
Yeah, the unification might be more.
Right.
I'm going to say that I really do not like the web export for Keynote.
What does it do or not do?
It doesn't do buttons right.
Oh.
The navigation buttons are not cool.
Is mm-hmm. it where they're placed or how they look or both?
No, it's all of it. Mm. You know, it's like they got it, they figured out how to make it go, but then it doesn't work.
Mm.
And then I can't put other elements, like clickable elements, inside mm-hmm. of the page. And here's the thing, if I put a button mm-hmm. on a page, I want it to be, you know, just the href link, open a new page.
Right.
That doesn't work.
Hmm.
And I was like, grr.
Yeah, you would think those hyperlinks would transfer over. Yeah. I have noticed that. I have noticed the hyperlinks don't necessarily behave the same way, nor should they, because really these programs are kind of this one engine that's really focused on output mm-hmm. more than input.
Right.
You know, the input's all very similar, but like, you know, Pages is very clearly designed for print
mm-hmm.
or PDF output, you know, Keynote for screen or movie output. And so it does sort of make sense, or how they're, you know, sort of controlling the whole interactive clickable interface part of it.
It's pretty amazing that you can send somebody a Keynote
presentation.
There we go. Keynote presentation. Save it as a PDF, and it's already the right size. You can click, click, click through it, and mm-hmm. it's just done.
Or, yeah, and save it as a QuickTime.
Even, right.
And just as a, I mean, I've done this a lot. We did a WebEx seminar mm-hmm. in Stanford last week, and I built a slideshow for it. And while I could have also played it in Keynote, it wasn't, the great thing is that I just exported as a QuickTime movie and then opened up QuickTime Player and used that as my presentation tool. And the one thing I liked about it is you know, that Keynote will build a QuickTime that has these built-in stops. So you hit the space bar and it plays the slide, and then it stops, just like in Keynote.
Okay.
Except now it's just the space bar instead of the arrow keys.
Mm-hmm.
But what you can do is it when it exports a QuickTime, it doesn't have the movie controller as a part of the default, because it's just basically given to people to hit the space bar to go through this linear presentation. But a lot of times I like to go back and forth.
Say back and forth.
Yeah. And it's a little trickier to slide around while you're in Keynote presentation mode to go backwards. You can, but it seems like when you're in Keynote presentation mode, everything's sort of, the whole computer's kind of taken over, right? The video card's sort of taken over, and I'm presenting, and I just don't feel like I have this fluidity. So I export a QuickTime movie that has this stop and start feature built in. And using QuickTime Pro, I do a Command J and go in and by selecting the track, itself, I tell it to show movie controller.
Mm-hmm.
So then it shows the quote standard QuickTime movie controller. Then I've got a timeline and I can scrub back and forth in my presentation, and just like it's a movie, because it is a movie.
Does right. it make chapters for each of the uh-huh. stop points? So you do the little chapter yes, drop down.
It
you
does.
Could go back to lines. A slide that way too.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
And so it's great. He's got these chapter markers. I can scrub back and forth. It's the same fidelity.
Hmm.
It's just excellent. And then, of course, I can send it to anyone who has QuickTime Player
right.
to view my slideshow, and you don't have to worry about the whole PowerPoint issue or lack thereof.
That's always a big, well, the what version they have, how big the file is. Mm-hmm. Oh, I can't open this. I'm on a PC.
Yeah.
Or I'm on a Mac or an old Mac running OS 9. How do I open this? What?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean.
Or you can embed it on a web page, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Just drag it up there and there it is, and someone can go scrub around it just like anything else.
Yeah, the QuickTime. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
I think an example of the that sort of, it's just a collection of media placed somewhere mm-hmm. on a canvas thing. That the inspiration at the kitchen remodel default template that comes with Numbers. Have you seen that one?
With Numbers?
Yeah.
it's, you know, pick a bunch of pictures of potential elements to put into a kitchen remodel with little annotations next to all of them. Mm-hmm. And it's almost Lightbox style. You just sort of have a bunch of things arranged in a way that would that are tying one visual idea to another with the markup. And that's not something you would expect to do in a spreadsheet.
In a spreadsheet.
You wouldn't think to look yeah. there for it. But the tools, especially the graphical tools within Numbers, seem pretty robust for doing things like that.
They really are.
Outside the grid.
It's totally outside the grid. It's the grid without the grid. And it's, you know, it's basically rethinking data from a visual point of view, just like FileMaker did years and years ago in its own way. This, to me, is just so remarkably beautiful.
And there's nothing stopping you from putting your, if you wanted to get the different costs for these different items in a table next to it or a mini spreadsheet next to it.
Right.
That's the nice thing about it is you could have that grid and all the calculations happening right next to your visual ideas as well.
Right. Exactly.
I'm most impressed about two things about Numbers. One mm-hmm. of them is that it's a page paradigm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's not a infinite
sheet.
Number of mm-hmm. cells. It's a finite number of cells. Mm-hmm. The page, because this is how I'm thinking about stuff. And so from an invoice point of view, to make an invoice, finally I can drag a graphic there without having to figure out, mm-hmm. okay, make a cell, put a table here.
Yeah.
That's not the right graphic. Rasterized it. Why can't you deal with an EPS, you stupid spreadsheet? Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of thing. And this is the big fight that's been going on for, you know, since spreadsheets have been around. Like, how do I put my logo right there?
Mm.
Because I might have, in what I do, I make so few invoices in mm-hmm. a year mm-hmm. that there's no reason to put it into an accounting package, per se, to have it generate that. I just want it to be the invoice.
Mm-hmm.
I want some to work. I want the quantities to work. You know, I just need it to do this. And to have that work in mm-hmm. 5 minutes
yeah.
was like, oh, wow.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
This is, I've been wanting this tool for 20 years, and mm-hmm. here it is. Finally, it does this.
Yeah.
And maybe I do invoices a little differently than you, but I find that I need that infinite number of cells for all the line items that I tend to put on mm-hmm. a given invoice. So I find the numbers a little constraining in that
it's basically,
particular regard.
Well, but no, you could go on and on and on for pages if you really wanted to.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He bills by the breath. So it's like an AT&T
you build
by
iPhone
the metabolic
invoice.
Function.
You're a bit biller, in other words.
He's a bit biller.
It's like AT&T sending out the iPhone bill.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's you. 600-page invoice after invoice after. The other thing I'm really fond of about numbers is that it's doing it from the formatting point of view.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the presentation of this, meaning that I can have typographicalness mm-hmm. added to a cell.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. so it's not just this ugly old, here's the Courier font.
Yeah, grid.
Grid of this. It's, you know, there's a design element to the presentation because mm-hmm. you can click on any cell and do Command I, and there's your palette of things that you can do to that cell.
Right.
Plus, also the great feature I love is the copy style, paste style.
Yeah.
Like in all three of these apps, that's the first thing you should put up in your menu bar. Because it's really great just mm-hmm. to like say, I like this cell. I spent some time working on it. You just go copy, paste the style,
yeah.
not mm-hmm. the data, and mm-hmm. bam, it's right there. I use that a lot in all three. One thing I recently rediscovered, thanks to Kenji, was in Pages, was the page layout mode. So
yeah, they kind of turned that off in the newest version,
they didn't turn it off, but they hit it. Because like, okay, the first one was just that.
Yeah, right. And it confused the hell out of everybody.
Right, because they thought, well, that's not a page layout.
It's not Word.
It's not a word processor.
So where's Word? You promised us Word.
Yeah.
Word 5.1.
You're right. Just talking about enabling show layout in well, the modes there? Or?
There are two, yeah. So there's two modes now with Pages. So originally it was just this, quote, page layout mode.
Yeah.
Then the new version, they included a, quote, word processing mode. So it's more straight word processor. Now, it's a subtle difference. Actually, it's not a subtle difference. I thought it was a subtle difference. So with the new one, I've just been going to word processing mode because I sort of understood that. And I was a little bit taken back by the page layout mode from version 1. But the new version with page layout mode, oh my gosh, it's so great.
Now, you said it was almost Illustrator.
It's almost Illustrator, yes. It's like, you know, Keynote's almost motion.
Right.
And since I got into the page layout mode, which you get to, at least I found I get to it by opening up a template. So I go to new from template chooser, And you can see that they have kind of two separate types. There's the word processing templates, and there's the page layout templates. So it is that different mode. So text, in other words, in the page layout mode, text flows from box to box, mm-hmm. like it used to be in PageMaker or as it currently is in InDesign or that kind of thing, where
you
have defined boxes and then you create the flow. But the ability to lay out a page very fast with just, you know, throwing in graphics here and there without having to worry about wrapping and all this is, it's really quite stunning. And again, you can use tables to constrain your text. Hmm. If you want to have some like real margin control of your text, just create a table and hide the table, or, you know, add lines, certain lines that you want of that table, just to really beautifully format the text that you want to do. So I've been enjoying. Now I'm completely in page layout mode forever when I create something now, because it gives me that full flexibility, that playground. But it doesn't take 20 minutes to launch like Illustrator takes to launch. And of course, it's not going to do certain things. I mean, it's not going to give me, it's not going to create outlines of my typefaces. It's not for heavy duty print jobs, but it's certainly good for. Well, you did something. You did a business card, didn't you?
I did a business card. Hmm. So I'm going to this festival, and I'm like, duh, I need cards. I need cards tomorrow. In fact, no, it wasn't just the festival. It was Macworld Expo.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
And I needed cards.
Oh, really? Those are? Oh, I saw those.
Yeah, the MacBreak Tech cards.
Yeah.
Yeah, I needed them for Macworld. I'm like, oh, I'm out the door. I got to go. I'm going to be late for, you know, 10 o'clock in the morning, or 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm making these the night before.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, I've got this Illustrator template. And I open up the Illustrator template, and I'm like, oh, I got to scale this, and I got to drive. Like, it's so manual to do it in Illustrator.
Mm-hmm.
So I opened it up, and I'm like, I'm going to do this in Pages. I'm sure this is way easier. Clicked the typewriter template, blasted the typewriter, because then, you know, that basically already has the lineups for this.
Mm-hmm.
Dragged the MacBreak Tech logo in, resized it to the right size.
Mm-hmm.
Then it was copy, you know, to the other templates. And then the craziest thing is this. It already knew who I was.
Right. I see that here. It's already put in media ink.
Because you've identified yourself in your address book. And so it's like, oh, that's you. So it already had my address and my phone numbers. And it was done.
Mm-hmm.
And I was amazed.
Yeah.
Didn't have to do anything. The only thing I had to do was underline the URL,
mm-hmm.
because it makes it a blue,
yes,
automatic thing. And I'm like, don't want
underline on a printed card. Yeah.
So I ended up having to change that. That was the only thing I had to change. And Command P, send it off to the inkjet. Had some big, thick card stock in there.
Oh.
And then we have
the guillotine cutter,
which we were playing with the other show.
Mm-hmm.
And I was out the door. And I had prints, how many cards per sheet.
Yeah.
I printed 5 sheets and went, you know, I'm done.
Yeah.
And, you know, today, in today's world, there's, sure, I could have had those cards sent out with overnight prints, or 4x6, or mm-hmm. any number of different card printers. But then I would have 500 of these cards, or 200 or 100 of these cards, and they wouldn't really necessarily be any better from the contact point of view than what I made.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly.
And so then I went I had to go to a festival, and I'm like, oh, I need the cards for the different logo. And so all I did was duplicate the MacBreak Tech template,
mm-hmm.
change it to name Beer School, and then drag the logo in there, and I was off on my way.
For those of you who wear many hats like John, it's a godsend.
Well, it's kind of like being Jim Rockford and having a card printing press in your car.
Mm.
That
I totally missed the reference. Is it Rockford Files?
The Rockford Files.
Yeah, he had a printer.
He had a little in his 72 Firebird or whatever car that was. Yeah.
What is, I know of the show, but I didn't watch it. Is it a detective thing?
Yeah, mm-hmm. a detective thing. And he would always have to social engineer information out of people.
Right.
So he would go up and say, "Hi, I'm an encyclopedia salesman," or you know. And then he had a different card. It would be the press. And so he's printing it, and now as he's walking up to the door, he's blowing on it to get the ink to dry.
Nice.
So I always wanted to be able to do that when I was a kid, to have a little Wii printing press like that. But then I have the next best thing, HP inkjet printer.
So probably the same size as his printer that he had in his car.
It's a little tiny thing. It was this mechanical, you know, and you had to put the ink on, to actually paint the ink onto the rubber letter on the stamp part. And I'm sure it was made out of metal, you know, because that's the way they did type back then.
He wasn't doing 4-color cards then.
No, he was doing 1-color cards.
That'll be forever. So, Ben, do you use Microsoft Office?
Not at all. No, I weaned myself off Office.
I'm so proud of you.
I weaned myself Office.
Off Office. I weaned myself Office a few years back, and I switched to Open Office. And I haven't been in organizations where they have super complex templates built around the advanced features of Word.
Mm-hmm. Word, right.
The words aren't coming. Word or Excel. So I was able to get away with it for the most part. Simple spreadsheet stuff. The basic import-output stuff from export stuff from OpenOffice has been there for versions now. So,
but on your
I haven't
Mac,
had much use.
On your Mac?
I've been using a lot of Google Docs, actually.
Oh, see.
Because more often than not, I'm setting up something explicitly to work on a set of numbers with somebody else. Mm-hmm. So just the easy sharing and we're all editing it up there has been my sort of go-to for spreadsheet stuff and shared docs anyway.
Right.
But I don't know. Mostly I'm working in a text editor on Kodi type stuff. So
right.
I don't find myself needing too detailed. But I do like the idea of being able to organize the visual information in these sort of pre-layout stuff in numbers. That looks pretty good.
Right. Yeah. John, about you, are you doing you're here in a company. Do they use Office?
They do. And the reason why is that their clients send them files that are of Word and PowerPoint and Excel. Mm-hmm. So they're, basically they're, corporate America is still ingrained
in
using
it.
It's still dominant. And there's no way to get out of it. There's probably 17 or 18 licenses of Office that we have to pay for and maintain. Mm-hmm. And, everyone's all excited about 2008. And I'm like, well, let's wait and see. And I really hate to do that. I'm really hating to be that guy who goes, well, let's make sure that it's really going to do it. Mm-hmm. And because it's expensive, right?
Yeah.
Upgrading 18 copies of something is a considerable amount of money. Mm-hmm. And eventually the value of the software on the computer is more valuable than the computer itself.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Which is, that's kind of thing. But it's one of those things like, guys, I really, I'm sorry to put, be that guy, the BOFH that says, no, we're not upgrading. Mm-hmm. We're not upgrading to OS 10.5. We're not upgrading to, they could have iWork. Yeah, that was
right.
Fine.
And how's that been working? I mean, have they,
they're
able to read certainly and they can.
Yeah. And the thing is not every one of those 18 machines needs that.
Right.
The ones that do, the ones that are doing these kind of things where they're using the tool in a way that wasn't made to use the tool.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. So they're doing a presentation to a client that's going to get PDF'd.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you can make that in a whole bunch of different things, but it turns out that Keynote is a great way to make those PDFs.
Exactly. All right.
The thing with Pages, Pages is enough, is close enough to Keynote that there's no relearning. There's no, once you know one, you can do another. And so when it comes time to do that, really quicky, rough layout of something, you don't have to do it in Illustrator. You can do it in Pages,
right.
And drag those elements to there, put that text there, and then off it goes. And then that way it looks like it's a draft. It looks like it's not the final product.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's extremely important in a business where you're getting paid for revisions and finals and that kind of stuff. And so, to have something that looks, this is the rough.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, this is obviously ready to be, changed and done and all that. So, those things are there. And then, for the stuff that the kids need to be able to do with Excel. And like I said, most people use lists.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not often used in this company.
Yeah.
If it is, it'll be a bug base, or it'll be a to-do list that somebody else has sent in from somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So it's more like a reading thing. And for the most part, Numbers has been able to open those files.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's your point about Ruff is well made, because some of the other tools, the new ones that are in the new versions, like the Instant Alpha, have you played with that at all?
Yeah.
It's remarkable.
Yeah.
How good it is, considering how hard because we know how hard it is to pull keys or alpha channels. I'm throwing together kind of quick lists of things. I'm putting together a gear list for our Stanford people. Like, mm-hmm. These are the cameras we like. These are the tripod heads, and getting down mm-hmm. to real detail. These are the Manfrotto connectors that we like.
Right.
So I'm pulling images from the company's websites. If I find a clean image, great. Copy image. Paste it into Keynote. It's got a white background. Mm-hmm. I drag the alpha. I scale it down. I drop it in. It is so fast to do that. Now, the alpha channel is not perfect. If I were going to be printing this, or if I'm, you're going to see the flaws. But for what I'm doing, it's absolutely perfect.
Well, it's that concept that I talk about called 90%.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And if you can get to 90% with little or no effort, mm-hmm. That's a huge win.
Yep.
And that other 10%, that's the hard part. That's the stuff that's going to take forever.
Right.
But if you can get to 90%, that means you can have the conversation where the client says, no, we're going to change this. Mm-hmm. Then you haven't spent a lot of time doing that.
Right.
The idea of using Keynote to handle all the text, where I knew they were going to get into there and say, no, we don't like that word. We want to use this word. That word's not positive. You got to change to this one. And then they end up, giving me way more words than I could use. And mm-hmm. it's like, all right, fine. But you have to start your conversation from a point.
Yep.
One of the pitfalls of earlier versions of software like these was always, too, that if you were to try and get a certain way into the work in that app, you would find some basic tool that it was missing that might be in something else. But you go into that other app and that doesn't mm-hmm. have tool A. The fact that they have those tables and the ability to deal with rich media and all of that stuff in all of them sort of blends the edges between what you want. And that's why we're finding you can do business cards and pages. You can mm-hmm. do your kitchen remodel and numbers and that mm-hmm. sort of thing.
Right.
That bleed is specifically because they all have shapes and tables and, mm-hmm. and rich media content.
Right. Yeah. Well, when we didn't even talk about graphs and we didn't even talk about mm-hmm. Those kind of things. Mm-hmm.
I did a floor plan of one of our rooms we're remodeling at the house in Keynote. Mm. And we had a summer student come help us, with stuff around the house. And I said, could you just give me this floor layout? And she said, sure, what do I do it in? Illustrator? I said, no, do it in Keynote. Here's how you create a shape, and you can say exactly how wide it is in pixels, and we'll mm-hmm. just do, inches to pixels or, centimeters to pixels. And
right. Or feet to pixels.
I'm only metric in my house.
It's
very, very small.
Looks great from here.
Yeah. It's 8x10. That means it's 8 pixels tall by 10 pixels wide.
All right, now I get what you're saying.
You can do livability analysis too, right? You get the little icon of the person, and mm-hmm. you sort of animate them around the room, see if they can get out the window easily, mm-hmm. all that stuff.
The little 8-bit dude running around.
So what I want Keynote Pro. I want a pro version of Keynote.
So what would
you
add?
Maybe I don't. I don't know. There's a few things that I would like. I would like to have a little bit more facility to do these while I'm giving a presentation, to do what I was doing in preview, which is add sort of on the fly marks and annotations and, almost like a live kind of presenter thing mm-hmm. that doesn't necessarily, it gives me a little more control over how it takes over my screen, something like that.
Have you seen that new screencaster software from Verisoft?
Yes.
That's
pretty impressive.
See, that's almost what you want.
I want you to have a look at that.
You just need to, because that's your laser pointer there. It's, it's all the stuff that you kind of want to have.
Yeah.
Plus, it's multiple views. You can have, switch to camera view, switch to screen view, switch to another source view. Yeah. Switch to.
I'll have a look at that. That might be a
good thing. Is revolutionary.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing, too, just the one thing that I'm hoping for in the next rev of Keynote is when you do these interframe moves that I was talking about, you know, something comes in, then you want to move it.
Mm-hmm.
When you move it, you don't have the same level of placement control. In other words, in the inspector, with the object, you can say exactly pixel perfect where you want it to be on the screen. When you do the move, you don't have that. You can't dial in the
destination explicit entry box for
there isn't for the move, right? Uh-huh. They haven't kind of gotten that far in the interface, mm-hmm. and so you have this little shadowed figure of what you're moving to, and it doesn't snap the same way, and so it's actually a rather large pain to line things up if I'm having the move to line up. So just a little thing like that.
See, that's where you got to go back to motion.
That's where you got to go to motion.
Because you're trying to do it to a keyframe, to a specific place in time, and to a specific place in space.
Right. But it wouldn't be that hard. Just one little thing they could add. And it would be there. It would be good.
Yeah, just recognize that you had assigned some move that needs interpolation, and then you just get in the dialog box, you're beginning and end points.
Yeah. The other thing, too, and Kenji's going to kill me because this is his thing. He solved it for me last week. I was doing a really complex slide that had about 100 elements in it. And when you do build elements in Keynote, you have this list of the different objects that you have and how you move them and where they show up. Well, if you draw them in Keynote, if you draw a shape like a box, it's only identified in the build thing as shape. Mm. And when you have 17 boxes, they all say shape, 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 and I'm trying to figure out, which shape am I? And so I have to click on it to see, and it's all this. And so I had these very small little shapes, and I was starting to get confused, and I said, Kenji, help me out here. And he went in, and you know, with every shape, you can assign a word or text to a shape.
Mm-hmm.
So he would double-click on a shape, and he typed in a word and then made it completely zero opacity.
Oh, so it didn't show up. So it was white or,
yeah.
Nothing.
Zero opacity.
Right.
Yeah. But then in the build menu, it had the words that he typed in. It was brilliant workaround.
Clever. Yeah. See, that's the other thing with this is that, you know, there's the clever of these apps.
Yeah.
You know, so we've talked about the clever up until now, right? But that is the total clever.
It's a workaround because what I would like, I want to edit that list, right? In Keynote, I want to say, hey, instead of shape, can I just give it another name, another variable, just for my own reference?
Yeah, but when they were building it, they had no idea that someone wanted to put 94 shapes on a slide.
I know, and have 1,700 builds with it, which is what I like to do.
Well, the rule of the Guy Kawasaki rule, which is 30 point type,
mm-hmm.
20 slides, 10 minutes.
Right. Yeah.
Or is that right? 30, mm-hmm. wait. Yeah. Is it 30 minutes, 20 slides?
No. You got it right.
10 point type.
That's for pages.
Right.
That's the other way around.
Maybe it's 20 minutes.
Ah, geez.
30 slides.
Always 10 use feet to pixels when you're doing your layout.
That's a real. So if you've never watched this, you have to go find this the idea of probably the ultimate presentation.
Doesn't he call it Presentation Zen, or is that am I confusing that with something else?
No, I don't know. But anyway, just look up 30-20-10,
mm-hmm.
and you can find this way of doing stuff. The idea, his thinking about 30-point type, mm-hmm. was you take the oldest person in the room,
mm-hmm.
and divide their age by 2, and that's what font size you should use.
That's excellent.
And when you're talking to investment people, they're about 60 to 70 years old.
Right.
So that typeface needs to be pretty big.
Yep.
I was totally wrong. Presentation Zen is Mr. Reynolds' blog about presentation stuff.
Well, we don't know anything about that guy.
Yeah.
But it takes about 20 minutes to watch. It takes exactly 20 minutes to watch this speech and go through it and find out what the story is about this.
Yeah.
And it's funny because once you get on that idea of 20, 30, 10,
mm-hmm.
it's absolutely funny to watch these people that have these loaded slides with all this information in it that they read to you.
Ugh, I know.
It's like, please don't do that. The other guy to watch about presentation stuff is the Lawrence Lessig stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The guy uses PowerPoint. He uses Keynote to mm-hmm. do this stuff. In an incredible way, and I would not want to be the guy who managed that presentation because he just rolls through this and every word that he says practically becomes a slide or thoughts of his sentences become that. And I don't think he could do it with any other tool. Mm-hmm. I think that
it's a timing. I mean, I saw the thing on corruption they did recently, which is brilliant, by the way. But I don't know. It's not that big of a timing.
It's timing. It's all about being
he might be running.
He's running it because he has a thought. He knows what's coming up next and when he's going to press that button and the whole thing. But you know, I don't know that the other tool. I don't know that PowerPoint would actually let him have the mixed media message that he's pulling out of this tool.
Yeah,
I've read a lot of his stuff, but haven't seen his presentations. Is he using the slides as punctuation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
They did a podcast of his latest thing that he did in December. The thing about corruption.
Mm-hmm. No, but I'll also go look at the "Sorry, I'm not going to run for Congress" slide.
Probably the new one.
Yeah, the brand newest one. Mm-hmm. He's justified in saying it. Makes a very great case for why he's not going to change Congress by running against this person.
Hmm. Yeah. But the upshot for what we're talking about tonight is, and I've said this 100 times, so for those who've heard it before, I'm sorry, but I haven't used Office for almost coming on 10 years now.
Wow.
So, and you know, once Pages came out, kind of like that, kind of did it. And yeah, you know, I'm not Mr. Corporate Guy, but I've had some consulting jobs in the past year where my client used Word and I was actually doing, deep text, and we were doing text editing, and I did it in Pages and exported it as a Word doc, sent it to them. They would do changes with track changes, came back, they translated just fine. Mm-hmm. So that even the track changes now work in Pages.
Right.
But they work a lot better they're a lot more elegant in Pages than it is in Word. So
it seems like a lot of what's keeping folks from committing to using an alternative tool is that mythical spreadsheet or Word doc that might come down the pike.
Right.
That he's using some feature that's not going to translate well.
Right.
But Craig, you work pretty much by yourself.
Now I do, yeah. Our machine went off. Is that bad? It made a buzzing noise?
No.
I think that was the doorbell.
No, it was the doorbell. Okay. We're still recording.
Thank you. Sorry. But with consulting, I actually have real clients who have real, I mean, they send me Excel spreadsheets. They'll send me PowerPoint, which I immediately translate into Keynote.
Right.
Seems like you could make the switch with confidence, knowing that the import export stuff is a lot more robust than it used to be. Mm-hmm. And if worse comes to worse, and you're on a project that actually does send you that oddball document that doesn't open, you try a different tool. Like even the Google Docs import stuff is a lot better than it used to be. It's still got some quirks, but if you have to fall back to getting a copy of the suite for the project, you know, usually the folks who are doing the really advanced stuff in that are probably going to be working for a larger corporation that probably has the bill rate that you can afford to add it as part of the project or whatever. But
there's very little I've seen PowerPoint do. It's an older app. It's got more maturity. But there's not a lot. There's, you know, little connector lines from like one box to the next and stay alive. It does that Keynote doesn't do. But I'm struggling to find the features that it's missing, you know, that are significant. And the ones that Keynote has, and just it's the way that it renders images and text is much more beautiful. And there's a subpixel thing, shading. Gruber talked about it a while back, of the actual technical difference between Keynote and PowerPoint. Or actually probably between the way the Mac draws a screen.
I think it's the OS at the OS level. There's some great article, it might have been his, that was actually talking about why the completely different take on font rendering between the two.
Right.
And I imagine that percolates up into something like PowerPoint.
Certainly does. Yeah. And I mean, it's just very clear. I can actually see a presentation from afar, and except for the obvious things where people use the same template with that terrible blue gradient, you know, that gives away PowerPoint. But even if they don't, I can pretty much tell within 5 or 6 slides whether it's PowerPoint or Keynote just by the look, just by this je ne sais quoi.
Well, the graph will give it away right off.
Mm.
And the smell of Comic Sans as you enter the auditorium.
Geez.
And those weird stick figure dudes. I actually had to animate those guys.
Really?
Yeah, this guy, these people came in and like, well, we really love this thing. I'm like, We have to model him. All right. So we modeled the PowerPoint dude so he could walk around and do stuff.
Wow.
And it was, and they're like, oh, this is great. And then they wanted to be able to do it with all the time. I'm like, are you kidding me? This took forever. This is why your bill was so much money. The text took no time at all. Making that guy walk around, that was tough.
Make more characters out of text.
Exactly. Please make more stringy dudes that... It would have been super simple to do in Modo, but we didn't have Modo at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, that guy had no didn't need a lot of shading. He was just, you know, just used the renderer as it was and mm-hmm. live with what you get at the other side. Exactly. All right. Well, this is a Mac product called iWork. It has three programs called Pages.
Numbers.
And Keynote. And it has a 30-day demo that you can download from Apple.
Or it might be on your new machine. I think they load it up on a lot of the new
ones. Right. If you get a brand new machine, there's a folder that says iWork. And if you double-click it, it gives you this...
It's a demo.
It gives you this box that says buy calendar 30 days and this other thing that's buy it online. You can activate it without having to go get a physical box.
Right.
And if you get a physical box, guess what? There's nothing in it.
There's nothing in it, so don't bother.
You might as well just buy it online and call it a day. And
so upside downside on the licensing is that, you know, like iLife and some of the other Apple apps, it's not an upgrade. There's not an upgrade path. I think they're only doing that with their pro apps.
Right.
So consumer apps is a replace all. So it's only $70 or $80.
You get when you buy a new machine, you get iLife automatically.
iLife.
So free. When the new one comes out in 2009 or 2000, mm-hmm. whenever they upgrade it again, it'll be $80. And it's not like it's going to kill you to mm-hmm. buy that because you're one. They're essentially 6 divided by 80 is less than $20 a piece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you get this incredible audio editor for $20. You get this incredible photo manager for mm-hmm. $20.
Right.
And some people are going to go, well, dude, you can get Picasa for free. I'm like, well, yeah, but it's Picasa.
Right. Exactly. Right. So it's very much worth it. That's the point we're making is that it's an amazing deal for some really incredibly flexible software. You can do a whole lot. You can almost get away with not having to if you're starting off on graphic design or video. This is it's a smart buy because you can play with motion graphics, you can play in Pages. Like I said, it's practically It's so Illustrator light, and so much in my thinking so much easier to do 90% of what you want to do.
It reminds me of what Bert Monroy says all the time about Photoshop. He's always when he's talking about the tools, he's always saying, "Pay no attention to what the name of the function is. Just playing around with the thing and see what it can do." And these three apps together sort of strike me as that, especially these uses we've been talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Don't think of it as a spreadsheet program.
Right.
Just open it up and start mm-hmm. playing around with what it's got. And
you might
be surprised at what applications you can find for it.
And the idea is that why isn't the page layout thing from Keynote the titler in Final Cut?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why don't I have those yellow lines that snaps to stuff? Why can't I draw a box? Yeah. Why can't I do this stuff?
Right.
You know, it's almost like, okay, these two teams don't talk to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe we'll get this in the next rev of this tool. But in the meantime, it doesn't really matter because I can do all this layout inside of Keynote, export it as JPEGs or PNGs or whatever, and then load it into Final Cut. And I get the ease of this without having to go, what's with the titler from, you know, why is the titler still exactly like it was in 1.0?
That might be the pro versus consumer sort of development schism, right? They've got professional workflows that people have created around these older tools that they're curmudgeon-y about a new interface, even if it is something that's tacked on to take care of the benefits that you're getting from these other newer packages.
Well, and in the case of the text generator, it's not. There's some cool things about that. One is that when you make a text generator, you can actually duplicate it and then have it do different things. So if you're trying to automate that, then of course, then that's the thing that you want to be able to do. Mm-hmm. But kind of doesn't help from an art point of view.
Right.
You know, it's like a bit too doesn't kern. So I was at this presentation that was being made or done for Ray Harryhausen. And so there's all these special effects guys that are talking about the things that inspired them to be visual effects people and wanting to get into this business. Phil Tippett was on the stage. Dennis Muren was on the stage. And there was a couple other guys. I don't remember their name, and I don't remember what films they worked on because I wasn't, you know, I don't know all of them, but it doesn't matter. Anyway, they had a Mac up on the stage and it was playing all the clips that they were talking about.
Right.
And so essentially all the guy had to do is reach over, press the, I'm going to assume the arrow key. It would go to the next slot, or actually it would start playing the movie. And then as once the movie was done playing, it went to the next slide.
Yeah, so they're using Keynote.
Yeah, they're using Keynote. Yeah. And the thing that was interesting about this was that they didn't think about, hey, we're using Keynote. It's just that we need a movie controller.
Yeah.
And we don't want to write a movie controller. We don't want to show the interface because we want the screen to be black. Yep. Otherwise, the whole theater experience is wrecked. And it's just got to work this way.
Yeah. And we don't want to use QuickTime Player because then we'd have to be doing, you know, menus.
Open, close, right. All this stuff. And it's, and the thing... Like, you know, you're looking at that going, you know, I bet you that's Keynote. It's got to be. And, you know, at the end of the whole thing, the guy goes Command-Q and you see the thing. It's like, yeah, it's a Mac. Okay, it's you know, it is that.
Yeah.
But it was like the no think. I'm sure this is the no thinking about, oh, I got to do this thing with these movies. Hey, let's see if this works. And, it, you know, of course it did. Back in the day, there was times when we had to make a tool using Director. That would have taken, you know, would have taken me a day to or a couple of days to figure out how to make it actually do what it needed to do. And then once I had that shell, then I could say, oh, yeah, we can make you a movie player. But then there's the whole issue of the orders of the movies and if they're going to go and show a specific frame, if they're going to go to the next slide, and all that has to be programmed. And it's just not that simple. So this was a really elegant thing to see. And I was really, you know, it's fun to see technology being used in a way that makes it so that they don't, no one's thinking about it. You're looking at the clips from Ray Harryhausen. You're not thinking about, oh, there's a Mac on the stage.
Right.
It becomes part of the conversation without announcing itself as to what it is.
Yep.
So,
and especially with the new, now, this is sort of new for Keynote, is in the new version, the ability to have some control over a movie.
Okay.
In the build. It didn't have that before. And so it was really tricky to get a movie to start playing at a certain time. You'd have to basically fake it by saying dissolve in 40 seconds or so. Now it has, they have an action where by clicking on it, it starts the movie.
Okay.
And then you can also set the in and out points of a longer movie in the Keynote app. And you can set the poster frame as to what it appears like when it's not blank of any frame that's in the movie. So there's a lot of new a new feature that really made it very, very nice. Oh, this reminds me. Our good friend Chris Eschweiler from Minnesota, our listener, wrote to me the other day saying, did you know, and he was putting in elements of, what was the thing we were playing with? Quartz Composer.
Yeah.
You can put Quartz Composer elements into Keynote. And he showed me a demo of a piece he had made using a Quartz Composer as a background. so it was...
There's our answer to the data question, too. We were wondering aloud whether or not you could get data-driven elements into your Keynote presentations that maybe even rely on calls to get live data. And that would be it, right? You put your Quartz composition as an element, one of those data-driven Quartz compositions into the Keynote.
That's so cool.
That's worth playing with.
That's worth learning about. That's worth.
we'll report back.
You're giving your presentation to the board of directors, and the stock has actually gone down.
Right.
It's like, oh yeah, and you'll be very proud of this slide. And it's like, and they're like, why is it moving?
There are contexts to use this technology.
Why is that number moving? It's automatically updating every 3 seconds.
You just have the background color indexed to that number. And only you will notice. So if it starts to get redder and redder, you know their stock is going down. So, I'm not going to mention that.
Ambient feedback to the presenter during the presentation.
Yeah. So that's very cool. So yes, Quartz Composer elements will work in Keynote as well.
Rad. Well, yep. I think we got it all.
I got one more thing.
Oh, okay.
If you want.
Yeah, go.
Well, the great thing with all three apps is, in terms of doing layout and aligning objects, is the guides. Be sure to turn on the guides. Because unlike Illustrator guides, which I've always found irritating, these three apps will have live guides that will throw up things when you're aligning with another object in the screen.
And then you don't have to think about those.
You don't have to think.
And you put an object up, and then guides automatically
appear. And it's really huge. When you want to do something fast, I go into Illustrator sometimes because I have to, mm-hmm. and I'm looking for the guide, and it's not there, and it drives me crazy. So I'm like, oh, that's only working in Pages,
right,
or Keynote. So again, it's just another one of the little things that they do that really, you know, max out your guides is my recommendation to try it, because it's unlike Illustrator, they don't tend to get in the way.
Talking about these are dynamic guides.
These are dynamic guides.
These are the ones that pop up yellow lines, right?
So it'll align to the top, bottom or center of whatever it is you're sort of rubbing up against.
Yep.
In the layout.
Right, and the page itself.
Oh right.
Now sometimes it takes a little finesse. If you have a bunch of objects, you kind of have to do some interpretation.
Sometimes you have to turn the guides off to make it go where you want it to go, and then turn it back.
It's just not detecting what it is you're trying to align against, I guess, in those cases.
Sometimes I don't want it to detect anything. I just want to put it right there. So you turn the guides off, and then you turn them back on, and then once you got it where you want it, then everything else will guide. Or a live guide to that place.
But you know what you can do, John?
What's that?
Is whilst doing that, instead of turning the guides off, hold down the command key. And then you're free of guide lockage.
Then you're overriding the guides. Huh?
Did you know that? Little tip here. You're distracted.
I was looking at the ETA from Kenji.
You hold down the command key, and you have complete freedom, guideless. And then you let go, and you're back. So much faster than shutting off guides. And that works in all three apps.
That's awesome.
It's awesome.
Okay, so I love it when I learn stuff on this.
I've learned like 15 things in this episode. This is my most educational episode yet.
We haven't even started. But yes.
Make sure we got all this. Get out of word processor mode in Pages.
Mm-hmm.
Photoshop background. Oh, yeah, automatic Photoshop background stuff. Finally, I can make my one-page invoice. Suckiness of Keynote export to web. Upgraded. And, you know, this is fun. We've been working with this app for 6 months, and it's one of those transparent things. I just use it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just one of those things that you don't think about, oh, I'm going into this or I'm going to do this. It's just, you know, it's like, and I'm kind of like, what did I do before this?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I use these same kind of tools, but now the tool is just that much better.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
All right. Well, it says Kenji's 30 minutes out.
All right.
So I guess we're not going to get him involved in this conversation.
He should be.
He should be.
I stole his best tip, but he'll forgive me.
He'll be fine.
Yes.
Hey, Ben Durbin.
Yeah, yeah.
Can they find you anywhere?
Still doing a lot of Pixel Core stuff, and then my not much going on there. Website is just bendurbin.com.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, thanks for covering the Python question.
Oh yeah, my pleasure. Yeah, I'm gonna subscribe to the comments on MacBreakTech.com. I wasn't able to find it right away, but I'm going to. I want to be a part of that conversation.
Yeah, there's a button that I got to turn on.
I thought that was it. It's just
something disabled in the. Well, it's actually not disabled. It's there as a feature because it's WordPress.
Yeah.
It's just that I didn't put that particular button in on the side.
I'm ready for it when it reappears.
I just got to /star it out of the out of the page drawer.
That's fun. I love the interaction. And so many of the things that we talk about on the show here are open-ended, where feedback on things that we either weren't aware of or things that people are trying to do based on what we're talking about, and they're running into issues. Love to hear about that
or
stuff.
Or got wrong.
Right. Or plain got wrong. Make sure you got it right, then comment.
We got it wrong.
Make sure that we got it wrong, then comment.
Then comment. Yeah, exactly. Craig, how about you? Where can we find you?
I'm going to plug the Stanford courses that Kenji and I are doing.
Yeah.
Publishingcourses.stanford.edu.
Can we get them anywhere besides Stanford?
No. You mean the
thought courses? I thought you were on the road.
We are on the road. Oh, anywhere, any place-wise.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, yes. We're in Washington, D.C. on the 7th of March, if this gets out before then.
It will.
Chicago, March 28th. And
definitely before then.
Los Angeles on April 18th.
Yeah, pretty much. We'll be out. It'll be an old show by then.
Something's gone horribly wrong. This particular episode is now by then.
Anyway, it's a one-day thing. Four of us present. Kenji and me are the main presenters. And we cover the whole gamut of video on the web.
I've heard through the grapevine, you guys are getting great response. The audiences are soaking up a ton of information. The
standing ovations, flowers.
Right,
it's touching. No, we're having it's a lot of fun. We get a lot in on one day, but it helps people, especially people who are in corporate world or in the publishing world, to we just help them understand the whole, you know, on the web kind of it's cultural and production and distribution kind of elements.
All changing.
It's amazing.
We've been saying this has been changing for the last 12 years.
Well, that's it. We're finding, Kenji and I are like, people are coming saying, we're really interested in doing video on the web. You know, it's like, it's so new to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And for us, it's so old. We're kind of amazed, but it's really starting to, like, people are starting to, like, get wise. And they're realizing that it's not just do whatever you've done and throw it out there.
No, it's, you know, a whole different
thing. There are subtle differences and not so subtle differences. And so that's kind of the focus of what we talk about, is we help people kind of, certainly those who are in traditional media, we help them pull out the differences. Yeah, and for those people who haven't been involved in you know, motion media, we tell them how much they need to do, but they don't have to do this whole big thing. So we're kind of a little bit of both.
You're having them keep the videos of dude in suit in front of blue curtain spouting information, to keep those for the archives and work on some new material.
Yeah. Although we still get the dude in suit in front of the blue. That's amazing.
Do they even key it out?
Sometimes.
Really nice looking curtain. What are you talking about?
Oh, not.
That's there on purpose.
Not
a green screen, just a curtain.
Just a curtain.
And the fern.
And the fern.
It's corporate dress.
And the little lamp off to the side. That's always funny.
Right, which is the wrong color balance.
You know, I've shot a bunch of those. I'm sorry.
Exactly. In fact, they're yours.
No, and well, the thing was is that dude in suit behind blue, that's why I said, oh, did they key it out? Because I always have to key it out and then put the words up, you know, that he's saying.
Keywords.
And, you know, one time I was making a joke and I actually did a particle effect coming out from behind the chair. You know, smoke effect going in. I didn't think that was
funny. They didn't like that.
No. I'm like, what are you implying that's coming out of him? I'm like,
hot air. Oh, I didn't mean that.
Yeah. Gas.
John Foster.
Well, talk to me by sending an email to info@macbreaktech.com.
Roger.
You can put comments on macbreaktech.com also. We have a placeholder for the show at pixelcore.tv. It does take comments, but, you know, it seems that everybody goes to the website instead. Mm-hmm. And where else can you find me? Beerschool.com, of course. Yes. Talking about beer and all that is beer craft related. Fun show.
Yes.
That's the show where people send us stuff to.
Mm. In fact, let's go find some now.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
All right. Well, anyway, thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the other side. Thank you.